What's up? It's me. It's your friendly neighborhood people pleaser. Coming at ya from the Blanket Fort Recording Studio in North Hollywood. And I'll tell you what, this Blanket Fort Recording Studio is vastly improving. It is vastly and fastly and quickly turning into a real thing. When I first started the show, I was legitimately sitting under blankets. I was sitting under comforters, trying to drown out the noise of this room that I'm in. I'm in this room with this giant ceiling and everything, and I wound up buying a better microphone that cut out some of the room tone better. That microphone wound up crapping out on me. It came back for a brief moment. The last few episodes you've been listening to, I've been back on my nice mic. And then tonight, it just died again. So right now, I'm talking into a literal performance microphone. Do I sound weird? If I do, it's because of that. I got to go get a new microphone. The one that I've been using crapped out on me. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know. But it crapped out on me. It came back. I thought maybe it was the wire. I got a new cord. Got a new cable for it. New cord wire. I don't know what you call it. I got a new one, and that brought the microphone back. I thought, okay, I fixed it. And then tonight it just went out again. And I got three new cables that I just bought today. So I tried them all out. Nope. So I'm using this microphone. But this place is looking good. I got new monitors. I got new headphones. I got a new desk. I got track lighting that goes all the way around the room. And on Monday, now this is the coolest part. On Monday, Monday's my birthday. Guess what I got myself for my birthday? I got myself 10 sound panels, big acoustic sound panels that I'm going to put all over this room. And I'm actually turning this room into a legit recording studio. Right now, as I'm sitting in it, looking around, it's starting to look like a recording studio legit for the first time. And that's exciting. So that's what I'm doing. And I'm excited. And it's good to be here chatting with you. I got my buddy Emily on the show. I told you last week she was going to be on the show. She did it. All right. We chatted. We talked. We're talking about where we're at as a society. What's going on? Where we're at 2 years into a pandemic. You know, we're going to get into it a little bit, and you're going to hear me talking a little bit and toying with the idea of like trying to give ground to some of these people, these anti-masker, anti-vaxxer people. And I think some of you are going to be like, are not going to like hearing me say certain things. Just know that like, at no point am I saying that I think that these people are right or are not the most frustrating or obnoxious people. I'm just trying to see if I can find a way for myself, for me to be able to move forward in this world without losing my mind any more than I already have, because this has been so emotionally and psychologically taxing in ways that I didn't expect it to be. And I'm sure that as I'm saying that, you're nodding your head, because I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And maybe that's just where we're at, is that we have to start looking at the emotional and psychological toll that we've all been faced with during this pandemic and start accounting for that and start taking care of that. And still, if you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated. You know, still trying to do what we can do to keep each other safe and to stay out of the hospital and to keep the death rate down. But yeah, I don't know. I'm talking with my buddy Emily. She was just on the show. We were just talking about Sondheim. She's back immediately because that's how much I like her. And I hope that you like her too. I don't really know what else there is to say. I'm souping up the studio. I'm excited about it, but I think we're just going to jump into it. So from a Blanket Fort recording studio that's starting more and more and more to look like a real recording studio every day, from a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my friend Emily Walton about COVID 2 years in.
You're back so fast. You're the fastest return guest I think ever. I've had return guests before, but you're like,
yeah, have you?
Yeah, but you're like right back. You're like,
I know. I mean, I guess the audience must have been like, we need more of her.
It was insane. They were ravenous.
Yeah, letters. They were writing letters.
The last two episodes or three episodes since you've been gone, they were like, what don't
Bring
you get
her back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a message from someone.
That's not her.
Said, that's not her.
Just chanting.
They said, what don't you understand? You fucking idiot. We said Emily Walton is co-host or we walk. And so,
right.
Yeah.
So here we are. So I am officially co-host now. Is that what you're, this is like a promotion?
I was going to ask you about it, but I think that
the answer is yes.
Okay. All right. Cause they did say that they're not going to listen to the show anymore unless that's the case.
They're going to walk, which people often do when they listen to podcasts anyway, like as they listen, they walk. So maybe that was just a weird way of saying,
yeah, they dust their hands.
We're going to keep listening.
Or we walk.
So much dust on their hands. Sometimes we jog.
Yeah. Okay. That's what that means, is that they're still going to listen because
they're going to listen. Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm. Podcasts are perfect for a nice walk in the park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay, cool.
You're on the hype mic.
Yeah, baby. Hype mic. Is it too loud? In all seriousness, is it too loud? Like when I go, hype mic, is that too loud?
No, that's fine. There's some plosives on there, but that's just, yeah.
How about this distance?
That's good.
Okay, I'm just going to stay here.
That's a good distance.
I'm not going to touch anything and I'm going to stay right here. And I'm not going to move my eyes. I'm not going to blink. This whole time.
Oh. It's so stupid. Microphones are so...
No.
Yeah. And I worry about this stuff
great.
So much. I just had Jeff Talbot on the show, and I felt so bad because I forgot to... Usually I do like a preliminary mix before I send it to the guy that mixes and masters the show, and I make sure that like at least me and the guests sound like we're on the same level. And for some reason, I just thought... Because I also have like my headphones on and I'm listening to it in real time, and I'm also watching like the sound waves in real time, and I just thought that we were more or less on the same level, and like my microphone was so much louder than Jeff's, and Jeff was doing such a good Jeff had this guy, he was holding this one, and he did such a good job of like keeping it at a nice distance, and I was like up in the big ba-bomb one that I have, and I'm so much louder than him, and I felt bad. I was like, oh no, it sounds like I'm trying to be like, I want Jeff to know whose show this is.
I'm powerful. Yeah. Did it end up sounding okay somehow, or was it?
It's fine. Yeah, it was fine.
It's fine.
It's just that every time he spoke, he was like, yes, so I wrote this play and it's there. And then I come on and I'm like, oh, great.
I am God.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Is your show back up? Is it happening, or are you guys
it's
in
happening.
And out of...
No, I want to knock on wood, but I won't because I know it'll fuck up the mic. So I'm just going to knock on air.
Yeah.
Looks like.
No one can see, but Emily was just doing a knocking gesture with both hands, and it looked like something else.
Dicks. Mm-hmm. Just say what, dicks.
It looked like dicks.
Invisible dicks. That was my band in high school.
Invisible
dicks with a Z. The show is back up and running. I think we are. Oh, I think we're in the clear. I don't want to jinx it by saying that, but like most of our company has now gotten and recovered from Omicron. So it's like, you know, I don't know how many shows I could figure it out, but they had to cancel something like 13 or 14 performances. And all in all, I missed, because of those performances and because I tested positive, I ended up missing almost three full, like I was gone for almost three full weeks.
Yeah.
So when we, last Friday was my first show back in almost 3 weeks. And it was like, it's just bizarre.
Just gotten back too. Like you were like, I just got back to performing. I'm just back to like this world. And then never mind.
Yeah. And it's almost, I was talking to a friend about this, and it almost feels harder to come back after this little in the scheme of things, momentary blip. It almost feels harder to come back than it did after the big year and a half break, because it's just, we finally were getting some momentum and feeling, starting to feel more stable about having a job and being on Broadway again. And then, like, it's just clear that there was no real way. Nobody was prepared to cope with that, you know?
Yeah. So that thing kind of tore through your company, and it sort of tore through New York. And I think, like, just speaking from like a medical standpoint, since we're both medical professionals, and
yes,
and we can speak about this, but
we can do that. Yeah.
but I think that, and this is really just anecdotally, but I think that what we're seeing is, like, once again, just like it was in 2020, like New York, when it gets hit by a contagion that is really contagious, it's a place where things just spread like wildfire and it's really hard to contain. But what we're seeing is that the hospitalizations and death toll weren't quite so catastrophic. And what that might mean is New York City is a very vaccinated city. It is a very like health conscious city for the most part. And we might be seeing that that's evidence that, like, being triple vaxxed, what we know is that being triple vaxxed won't make you not get Omicron. What it will hopefully do, most likely do, is keep you out of the hospital and keep you from dying. And that's what you've been seeing anecdotally.
Yes. Oh, God. I mean, yeah, anecdotally. And, like, I kept saying I was collecting my own data about it as it was happening. I decided recently to start saying data instead of data.
Mm.
Do you feel like that's a good choice?
I still say data, and people love to comment.
You'll get there.
They think they're they think they're so clever in the comments. They always say it's pronounced, and they just write the word. They just write it. They just say it's pronounced data. But that's, like, it's kind of a funny comment joke. You know, it's like, because
that is,
you know.
But also, people say data. Data is a perfectly acceptable way, right, of saying it. I feel like data sounds more mature.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I see. I feel the opposite. I feel like.
Do you?
Yeah. I feel like saying data feels like, oh, of course you would say data, because that's the name of the guy on Star Trek, and you think that that's what it's called. But actually, if you're a scientist, you would know that it's data. And that.
Gosh. I feel like people who say data, my perception is that people who say data are just way more confident in having knowledge about data. Like, they're people who just say it every day.
My perception is that people who say data get laid more than people who say data.
That's not important to me. Okay. I'm above that. Now you're making me question this choice. I really was starting to feel confident about it.
No, you're making me question my choice. I feel like
Don't.
Yeah. No,
I'm going to keep saying data at least for this podcast. And I'm going to be saying data a lot.
Okay. I like that you're saying I'm collecting my own data instead of I'm doing my own research, because that has a connotation too, being like, I did my own research, and you know what I mean?
Well, I'm cobbling together bits of information because it was all happening in real time. In real time. I mean, of course it was happening in real time, but, like, all of my friends, it seemed, were testing positive. So I was just in touch with everyone saying, how are you feeling? And it seems like most people are boosted and still tested positive, but at worst it was like a few days of a bad cold, which is, I'm sure, what you're hearing and what everyone is saying.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of relying on that information that I was gathering, because my own experience with it was the same. It was like a few days of feeling kind of shitty, and I had just gotten my booster shot 3 days before I tested positive. So I don't think it was like doing me any favors yet, the booster. It was a few days of not feeling very good. And then I was just depressed. Then I was just like, now what the fuck am I supposed to do for a week of just sitting here? And it was through Christmas the holidays and stuff.
Like, you didn't.
Yeah.
Were you by yourself on Christmas?
I sure was. I mean, listen, I wanted, and I did. It didn't stop me from having a pity party. I knew that so many people were in the same boat as me, but I still managed to feel very sorry for myself.
No, you get
that
to.
Day.
You get to.
It was just on the day. I mean, but on either side of Christmas, I was fine. But that day, it definitely, you know, I was Zooming with my family, and thank goodness that's an option for us. But it was just like, it just sucked. It was just sad. And I felt like, I love Christmas. I love the holiday season, and I love going home to my parents' house and being around their Christmas tree. And yeah, so it was crappy. But then as soon as I felt like I really just needed to get through Christmas. And then once that was over, I was like, okay, it's fine.
Because you're an independent woman who...
I'm an independent queen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And but you live on your own in the big city, and
I do.
And you can do it. Like, but it's just that there are times where it's like, if it's your birthday or if it's something, you know, and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be around people.
I'm supposed to be. And just also when you think about how much shit we have all been through in the last almost 2 years now, and just feeling... I know it's just a day. I know it doesn't really mean that much in the scheme of things, but I just kept thinking, this is not, nobody wants to end the year this way. Like, and then I kept saying in my head, the last thing I need is to be alone on Christmas. And then I was like, no, actually, Emily, the last thing you need is to die. Like, right. You're not going to die. You're going to be, you know, so I had to sort of talk myself, you know, out of that
way of
thinking.
Or the last thing you need is to like, be saddled with the weight of being like, I gave it to someone else who didn't have an easy ride with it. And they,
yeah,
you know, and I think that's a little bit what I want to talk about with you today is like talking about just sort of the psychological toll and weight of everything that we have been through over the last 2 years and the place that we find ourselves in now with this current wave, which is the fourth wave, which is, you know, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, I asked a doctor friend of mine, because this was back when everyone thought if we can all hunker down for like 6 weeks, 2 months tops, if we can just all agree to watch Tiger King and Zoom and make lots of jigsaw puzzles and do like fun
and bread
and sing show tunes to each other on social media and try to keep everyone's spirits up, we'll be okay. Yeah, bake bread and and I asked a friend at that point, I said, how long, I said, what do you think, how long till we're out of this? And she goes, oh, it's a pandemic, so it's 18 to 24 months. And I was like, what? And she goes, that's how long pandemics usually last, is 18 to 24 months. And I was like, why are they on the news? They make it sound like we just all need to like be good for a couple weeks and then we're good. And she was like, no, that's like there'll be variants and there'll be new strains and there'll be like waves of outbreaks. And I just was like, oh God. And I still was like hopeful then, thinking like, well, maybe she's wrong. Like maybe we'll.
I was gonna ask. Yeah, I was going to ask if that changed your perception of the whole thing. Like, do you think that prepared you more for what actually ended up happening or?
No, I was still like,
okay.
I was still like, well, that's a pandemic when people don't work really hard to stop it. And we're working really hard to stop it. And of course,
yeah,
like,
every one of us in this country definitely is working really hard. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It is so weird being in this country because it does feel like we are in a unique position of like, we like in many ways, because we're such a populous country and because we're such a like global presence, it feels like we fucked it up for the entire world. Cause so many other places were just like, no, we really are all pulling in the same direction and you all can't seem to get your shit together and can't seem to get on the same page. And so it's embarrassing, but
yes.
even being in that and watching as half of the country was like not doing it. I still was like, well, I think half of us really, really trying should be enough. And sitting here at near 24 months and also sitting here at like fourth wave, knowing that that's usually a pandemic too, I am starting to be like, okay, can I now start to have a little hope that like we're nearing the expiration date of what my doctor friend told me 2 years ago that I was hoping wasn't true, but of course is now that I'm sitting here at 2 years. Or is this the rest of my life? Or is this now forever? And I kind of think it can't be that. I kind of think that like whatever happens next, like we're sort of in a place where we have to find a way to live our lives and to be the way that we are. Because the psychological toll has been a a motherfucker. And what I want to ask you about, and it, you posted about this, and it's been on my mind because I reposted what you shared. You shared a video of a woman who was talking about how we need to stop moralizing people contracting the coronavirus. Yes. And we need, yes, to stop thinking that they did something wrong. Early on, there was that feeling of like, when we were all hunkering down, making bread, Zoom calling each other, doing puzzles, there was that feeling of like, if you knew someone who got it, you instantly thought like, well, what were you doing?
What were they doing? What were they doing?
Where were you? Yeah. And usually you would, yeah, find out that they like went to some sneaky little party. They were like, yes, yeah, yes, I went to a sneaky barbecue. And you're like, oh, yeah, cool. Wow. Awesome. Like, and that's usually what you found out. And there was this sort of judgment. I think 2 years in, and knowing how contagious Omicron is specifically, we need to kind of drop that. Right?
I think we yes. Oh, absolutely. And I feel like I've come to the other side of that. Like I started, and I didn't think about it in terms of what you just said, which is that early on, yeah, there was a lot of judgment, and I was judgmental of people. And I know people were judgmental. We were all judgmental of each other's actions because we want to be able to place blame. This is such a bizarre thing to cope with on a daily basis that like you want to be able to look at someone and go, it's because you did something wrong that this happened. And that's just not how it works. And there's another meme that I've seen going around, or I did a couple weeks ago, that was like, you can't moral responsibility your way out of a viral pandemic. And I think getting it when I did, being one of 8 people in my cast that tested positive within 48 hours, I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that sort of self reprimanding feeling because all I did was go to work and come home. And I know that I got it at work and I had to go to work. You know what I mean? Right. So I think the sheer contagiousness of this particular variant is, it kind of forces you out of that way of thinking. And I, now that I'm on the other side of Omicron, people, you know, rightfully so, are still anxiously trying to avoid getting it. And I, of course they should avoid getting it. It's still a risk. There's no guarantee that you won't be affected by it.
Right.
But I feel relieved at this point to have gotten it, at least in New York City, because now I'm like, oh, now I don't have to be in abject fear of getting it when I go into a grocery store, because I was someone who tested positive in the early wave of people who did in, you know, early to mid-December, I would get texts from friends saying, just freaking out about getting it. And at this point, I'm like, listen, you might. And if you do, I hope that you're emotionally prepared to not berate yourself for getting it and to not freak out, because you can do everything right, I'm putting in quotation marks, and still get it. And that's what's happening to a lot of people right now.
Yeah, and
oh, it's
sorry, jeez.
It's okay.
I was like, right when I started talking, I was like, nope, it's right there.
Not gonna happen.
Throat full of not Omicron, hopefully. But
and if it is, Austin, gonna be okay.
Yeah, you know, because I've also been going to work in mixed company, and that's the thing is, like, you just don't know who you're around. People wear masks. You hope everyone's vaccinated. You hope everyone's doing within reason what they can do, but 2 years in, like, there's a lot of jobs where people just never had the luxury of not being at work. Like grocery store workers,
yeah. Yeah.
Never got to not be at work. Healthcare workers never got to not be at work.
Right.
And now people in show business, and it's been a while now, but slowly but surely have been finding ways back to work because it's part of what we do. It's part of our human experience. And like, what are all of us supposed to, all of the showbiz people supposed to do for 2 years? Are we all supposed to just twiddle our thumbs and be like, you know, and so you can get it at work, and I think you try your best. I think the thing that makes it hard to talk about this is that it's so easy to sound like a person in the, it's not a big deal. You know, the doom and gloom is worse than the virus itself, and we should all not be afraid and not live in fear, and, you know, freedom over fear crowd. And it's like, I feel like I need to stress so much that I'm like, we're not those people.
No,
and
not at all.
I've been watching you since the beginning, and like, I've watched you like be very diligent, and also I've watched you like express the anxiety that this has caused, and the mental toll that this has caused, or psychological.
I feel like, yes, I'm definitely not in that camp of freedom over fear. I think it's a coping mechanism at this point to go, I don't know how we move forward if it's all in fear, if it's all in the same kind of fear we felt almost 2 years ago,
right,
when we knew nothing about this. I just don't know how our human brains do that. And I think that's why at every turn we're grasping for any little bit of information that might be a silver lining, that might be a sign that it's coming to an end. Of course we are.
Yeah.
Of course we are. My friend keeps saying, she said to me the other day very earnestly, like, I don't know about you, but I am really ready for this to be over. And I was like, no, I really want this to keep going. Like, yeah. And so now we have this recurring joke that she's like the one person who just wants it to end, but everyone else is really hoping it sticks around for at least another couple years.
I know this is kind of a controversial thing to say, but like, I'm kind of done with this.
Hear me out. I know it sounds crazy.
I kind of think this is bullshit. And I know that, like, I know that I'm supposed to be in love with it, but like, I kind of think it's the worst thing I've ever lived through.
The worst thing ever. And also, I kept saying too, while I was home isolating, at this point, and I know it's a privilege to be able to say this, I'm less worried about the physical toll this strain is taking than the psychological, mental, emotional toll it's taking on all of us. Yeah. That is what, looking forward, we're going to be feeling the reverberations of this for I don't know how long.
Yeah.
It really makes me worried for all of us, for humanity, for myself, for my family. Like, it just ripples out.
Well, and I want to say, too, that I had friends early on who kind of leaned more toward the freedom over fear camp, not full on anti-masker, anti-vaxxer people, but people who said stuff like, I don't think that we're prepared for the psychological toll that this is going to take, like shutting down, being isolated from each other. And I remember early on being like, well, that's a risk we have to be willing to live with, because like, we're trying to save lives. So if we can all just deal with a little bit of isolationism and a little bit of, and I remember early on thinking that people who had that take were being irresponsible and were like prioritizing like their discomfort with the lockdown over the very real risk of like, of trying to protect immunocompromised people and just trying to make sure that the healthcare system wasn't so overwhelmed, and that we could, that vital aspect of our society could continue to function the way it needs to function. But I'm looking back from this vantage point going, I want to give credit to those people and be like, you were right. Like, you had a really good point.
You know? And because what you're saying is that's how I felt too, but you felt that because you thought, okay, if we do this for a very finite period of time, right, maybe a few weeks, maybe a few months, life will resume as normal.
Right.
And so of course we felt that way. And that was like our hopeful naivete, but I don't know. Of course we felt that way. It's just, but the amount of shifting, the amount of like massive shifting we've had to do in our brains over the course of this is just like, it's so unsettling and it's so destabilizing. And yeah, we're not meant to exist in this kind of isolation. Humans aren't meant to do this.
Or in this kind of constant fear of each other that I constantly have to look at people that I'm working with or that I'm around and think, who are you? What are your values? Where, you know, how, how conscious are you being? And are you concerned about my health
Me,
and everyone else.
Others.
Yeah. And I mean, the amount of people that I've talked to over the last 2 years who have expressed that their anxiety has been a massive problem over the last 2 years, where I thought it was just me early on. I was like, cause I've lived with debilitating panic attacks my entire 20s and it was a big problem. And then I got sober and like, it felt like I got a handle on it and that felt really good. I was like, I don't have panic attacks anymore. That's really cool. That's a great aspect of being sober. And about a year and a half into being sober, the pandemic happened and my panic attacks came roaring back. And they're still not as bad as they used to be. I used to have them like every day, but they're a big factor in my life again. And initially, I didn't really relate them to the pandemic. I didn't really connect them to what was going on. I thought I had like an album coming out, and I remember like being stressed about that. And I had some other things happening that I was like, no, I'm just my anxiety's coming back. And then I realized, like, I started talking to more and more people who said this thing has really been making my anxiety extra bad. And I was like, oh, I'm just living in a very tense, uncertain world every day.
Yeah.
Where, and the reality is, like, we're always living in that world, but there was something about.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Keep going.
First of all, I'm sorry that your panic attacks have come back, and you're not alone in that. And yeah. I also have panic attacks, not daily, but I mean, I have them, and I've had them for a decade at least now. So I relate, and I'm sorry because it sucks. Mm-hmm. But I was going to say, my therapist, who I just am obsessed with, years ago, when I was dealing with a lot of social anxiety, she defined anxiety as being the intolerance of uncertainty. And I really liked that because the word intolerance felt really active to me. Like, oh yeah, the reason anxiety is so uncomfortable and painful is because I literally can't tolerate not knowing. I can't tolerate the uncertainty. So that's what we're experiencing. And if nothing else, this pandemic has shown us that, like, we never have any control. We never have control.
Right.
But like, this is a really big example of, like, a really painful, huge example of that.
I think people who get a diagnosis in life, like a life-changing diagnosis, MS, cancer, you know, like anything that's going to alter the course of your life, they experience this on a personal level where all of a sudden they're acutely aware that they're just not in control of the game, that this idea that they could manage their own health by exercise or eating right or ticking all the boxes is largely an illusion. And that, like, at the end of the day, like, we all are living with cancer growing in our bodies right now that we don't know where it's going to crop up and when it's going to crop up, or a problem that we just don't know that's happening with our kidneys that, like, we're not aware of it yet, but, like, it's developing and there's no way to really see it in an annual physical. Like, it's just kind of like we're all living with that. And I think that people who get those diagnoses are, like, suddenly really aware of, like, oh, I'm completely kind of I'm not running the show here. And I think that all of a sudden with the pandemic, the entire species got on that level at the same time. Like, we were all given this diagnosis of, like, hey, everyone, all of a sudden going outside, you probably won't, but you don't know if you're going to be one of the people who dies, because a lot of people are dying. And yeah.
But then I feel like there's something liberating about that acceptance. Like, I think ultimately you can get to a place of sort of relief of going, oh fuck, not that it should make you become a passive person and not try to achieve things you want to achieve, or I don't know, treat yourself and others well. But the problem is that there are so many people who aren't accepting of that. And so I don't think it's the entire species that said, oh yeah, we're not in control. So many people are like, no, I can fucking, I'm cooler than this virus, and I'm stronger than this virus, and I'm invincible. Like,
I've got a vaccine. It's called my immune system. Yeah, those people.
And it's so delusional. It's really, really, yeah, it's crazy to me. But
here's something that's kind of difficult, though, that I want to see. I just want to see, and maybe this isn't something that we need to do, and there probably is a better answer than this. But is there any room for people like you and me, who, again, I can't stress enough, are, like, people who have been on board with the CDC guidelines and recommendations and have been trying our best to limit our public interactions as much as possible and try to only interact with people who we feel like are also taking similar precautions and trying our best to, over the last 2 years, live a life but also be cautious, wear a mask, get vaccinated.
Responsible, respectful, yes.
Trying to be those people. Can we yield any ground at this point, 2 years in, to people who from the beginning said, I'm not having my kids live that way. I just refuse to live my life in perpetual fear every single day. I can't do it. I would rather risk getting sick and deal with it when I get sick than live my life terrified every single day. And at the time, like you said, like, we thought well, geez, can't you just be a team player enough and be unselfish enough to just give us a couple months of your time, a couple months of your commitment? And that's what we thought, but we saw the way it went down. And now that we're 2 years into this, like, can we yield any floor to those people and go, maybe you had some kind of a right idea of thinking, I just don't want to risk losing my mental health to this thing.
I think there is room for that, but I also, my instinct, or maybe this is wrong, but I feel like my instinct is telling me that a lot of those people who made those choices early on are also maybe the people who won't get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So if their stance is, I don't want to risk my mental health, my children's mental health, which is a very valid thing. And they're like, listen, we're going to do it this way. And as soon as a vaccine comes along that can protect us, we are going to get that vaccine because I want to resume normalcy. I have space in my heart and brain for.
Yeah.
I mean, I have space for all of it because, like, at the end of the day, everyone just wants to.
Right.
I mean, what? We all want to stay alive and be happy. Is that it? I mean, like, I think that's probably it.
I think that the logic that they have is, I can't control whether or not I get the virus. And they probably think about it like that. Like, I'm not going to be, even wearing a mask and social distancing, I don't know where it's coming from or which direction. It's a microscopic thing that I can't see. So I can't control that. And I can't control whether or not I'm going to be one of the 2% of people who has a really, really bad time with it and maybe dies. I can't control that. What I can control is how I approach my mental state on a day-to-day basis, and I choose to live in a more so I think that's the reasoning, but I think you make a really good point that it's like, cool, but when there are things available to you that are easy and free and accessible that are common sense, can you at least get on board with that?
Yeah, I also think part of this is, I'm thinking about the masks now, and I've often thought over the last couple of years, I still wear a mask, of course, when I go into a store of any kind, you know, whatever the rules are, I pretty much follow them. But wearing a mask is such an easy way to show, to literally just show, to signal to other people, I care about you. Like, yep. It's actually kind of a gift that we've been given to be able to very easily exclaim to the world, I care about more than just myself.
Yeah.
It makes me emotional. I don't know why it makes me emotional, because it's just like, we don't, especially living in a big city like New York, you don't get that opportunity. And I'm not saying, like, thank you, pandemic, you've really given us the chance to show. but in some ways, I feel like, why aren't people, it makes me mad that people wouldn't receive that as a way to show their fellow humans that, like, they're not just out for themselves. I don't know. And maybe that's not how everyone thinks.
That's what makes it so hard to try to yield floor to these people, because over the last 2 years, we have been inundated with what feels like the grossest displays of human selfishness and lack of regard and compassion for other people. Like, I get just so still really, like, bent out of shape. I've gone as far as, like, on Twitter calling these people sociopaths, like people who diminish and kind of seek to minimize the toll, like, you know, these people who, like I said, what I can give them is the mindset of, I can't control how sick I get or how I get sick. What I can control is, like, how I'm going to live my life, and I want to live my life free and open, and I want to take care of my mental state. And I'm like, I can give you that. What I can't give you is, you're sitting here talking about the mental toll that this might take on your kids to have them wear a mask and have them miss prom and stuff like that, but you don't care about the psychological or mental toll of the families who are grieving, of millions of families worldwide who are never going to be the same because they lost loved ones to this sudden thing that swept the globe. You're not compassionate to the healthcare workers who are just at their wit's end and quitting in droves, not quitting because they're being forced to get a vaccine. Like, there are those people who are walking out because they refuse to take the shot. But I know stories of healthcare workers who are just like, I can't do this. I can't keep telling people this is why you got sick and this is what you can do to be better. And them looking at me and, like, basically spitting in my face and telling me to fuck off. Like, I can't keep doing it. And that toll of, so I get extremely frustrated when it's like, why don't you care about the stress that you're putting on our most essential, like, defense workers, our healthcare workers? Why do you not care about that? And why do you not care about the families of people who are grieving, or people who died, people who are are dealing with that aspect of this whole thing. And I think that's what makes it hard to yield any floor to these people, is it's just like, you're the worst of us. You're so, yeah.
I know, but then I also go, okay, well, there are a lot of people, presumably more people with that line of thinking who are grieving because they've lost loved ones because they didn't do the things that we are. So, right. So what about their grief? Because grief is not hierarchical. You can't say
right.
Vaccinated people's grief is more important. Like, so I'm going, well, what are they doing with all of that? And I don't know the answer because I don't really thankfully know many people in that position, but I'm curious about it.
I heard a story from the same doctor friend that told me 18 to 24 months, who told me that a doctor in her hospital that she works at there was a man who was dying in the ICU, and they went to this man's family and said, he's dying. He maybe has a day, maybe. You can come back and see him, but you need to wear a mask. And this is something the family had been told several times the whole time he'd been in the ICU. You can come back and visit, but you need to wear a mask. They refused to wear a mask, so they weren't allowed to go back and visit. And it was just this really simple thing of like, even if you think masks are so stupid, can you wear a mask for 5 minutes to come and visit your dying father? And they wouldn't do it. So the man dies. Doctor comes out, tells the wife and the family, so sorry, he passed away. She punches him in the nose and breaks his nose and says, this is on you. You wouldn't let us give him ivermectin. And he just kind of goes, you know what? I quit.
I'm done.
I'm not doing this anymore. And I like, I hear that and I'm like, what that woman is doing is a grief response. Like, she is in full state of denial of what's happening. She can't, and there's anger and denial, and like, it's there. So I want to be compassionate to the experience of even her, even this person of like, yeah, you're going through like a really, but also like, it's so hard because you're just going, man, there were so many options given to you that were easy things that you could have done that you refused to do. And I don't know why you would have your husband even in a hospital if you don't trust those medical professionals to do everything that they can to save him. I don't even know why he's even there. Why'd you?
Well, right. It makes you go, you can't pick and choose when to trust medicine, when to trust science. You can't pick and choose. But I also, just hearing you say that made me think, I think we've all been living in a state, living and behaving from a state of grief, like in grief response for almost 2 years. So that makes me go, oh, we have to have compassion for each other, for everyone, regardless of their feelings about the pandemic or the way they're behaving. But I feel like what our the benefit that we experience is that we're actually more in touch with our own grief. We can access it, which makes us more open to each other and to the world. And I think those people that we're talking about are so shut down. They can't access it. So then I go, oh my God, these people, they're probably living in more fear than anybody, but they just can't touch it. Like,
right.
And that's sad. That's actually sad.
Well, and that is the reality too, is like when these people talk about, you know, freedom over fear and stuff, it's the same people that feel like they need to have a gun on them at all times, lest at any point in their life, someone should pull out a gun and they need to be a hero. Like, I mean, I shared a tweet the other day that was like, there are two reasons that I can think of for open carrying, and I can't think of a third. If anyone could think of a third, I would love to hear it. And the two reasons are, you either live in constant fear, or, and this is the more insidious one, you get off on making other people feel uncomfortable. You like the idea of making other people, you know, you like sort of flexing and making other people feel uneasy around you. And that one, I think that both people definitely exist. And it's hard to think of a third option because it's like, well, it is either of those two things. You either like making people back away from you in fear, or you yourself are, whether you want to admit it or not, are so afraid of finding yourself in a gunfight that you want a loaded weapon on you at all times, ready to defend your life. And I'm like, can you argue that a person who does that is living in more fear than a person who wears a mask just to signal, you know, or less fear, I should say. Yeah. You know, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
But again, how much fucking how much can we extend ourselves to those people? We're sitting here trying to find ways to have empathy and compassion for these people who are living in fear and who are actually sad and scared.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that for us. So part of me goes, fuck this. I don't want to waste our time and breath doing this, because it's fucking frustrating.
No, it's so I know that this conversation, because even when I shared that video that you shared of that woman saying we need to stop moralizing people getting COVID, like we need to understand that like people who have been doing everything they can to stay safe and to keep other people safe are getting COVID and have gotten COVID since the beginning. Like it's not just people who refuse. Like, look, I'm one of the lucky few who hasn't gotten it that I know of. I've never had a positive test. I was so privileged in so many ways to be able to work from home. Like I've been working from home for the last 2 years. I see like my family and a small circle of friends, and we all have like-minded values. Somehow my family with 15 grandkids and four siblings who are all married, and like when we all get together, it's like 25, 30 people. And somehow like we only just recently started getting positive cases in the family, and like somehow we were able to ride it out. But throughout this whole time, if I were to think, well, the reason why I haven't gotten it is because I'm a more responsible person than other people. That's the reason I haven't gotten it. I think that going to that anecdotal place is like, that doesn't make sense either, because I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I got to work from home. I'm lucky that I had options that kept me safer. And I also was just lucky that I probably just dodged a few bullets. I know I was in the room with people who had it and I had to go get tested.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely had some close calls. Like I got lucky. So I think that from the beginning, there have been people who have been trying to do their part who have gotten it just because it's just the water that we're all swimming in. But I shared that video that you posted, and like several people inboxed me and were like, no, I don't like this. No, I think that this is like absolving people of personal responsibility. And like, no, we don't just need to say like, look, it's been 2 years. Maybe people are just going to get it. And I'm like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying like,
no.
We need to understand that. Because I can feel like listeners will have a hard time with this episode too. Will be like, what are you saying? Are you saying that it's time to be done with taking precaution? And it's like, no, I'm just saying that I think we need to 2 years in, look at it, look at what happened and be real about it and go, we've been doing our best and we've still been getting sick. We've still been dying in some cases. And at some point we do need to start tending to our emotional well-being. And
I also just think for me, it was less about absolving. That thought is less about absolving and more just about not exacerbating the situation by berating myself, but by just, you know, but by like, it's really, it was more of a selfish thing of going, I'm not going to give myself a hard time for getting this because, right. And it was really actually quite easy for me to accept and embody that because, like I said, most of the people I work with tested positive in about the same couple of weeks span. So it's like, what business? It's almost narcissistic to be like, I did everything I could, because we all, right. Everyone I work with did everything they could. And it just fucking happened. Like,
right.
And I'm not saying it's something to shrug off at all. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
Because again, it's clearly so unpredictable. The fact that you've been in situations where maybe you should have, in quotation marks, should have contracted it, but didn't.
Right.
There's always been a level of unpredictability to this. Why does a married couple, one of whom tests positive, why does the other person not? I don't know. I don't get it.
I also think anyone who says like, no, I really have done everything I can. Because even that thing, I'm like, what does that mean, though?
What does that mean?
Because I think short of full agoraphobia.
I'm getting a sweater. Okay?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I can still hear you.
I'm going to hold for just a second.
Sorry, I just got so cold.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
I think short of full agoraphobia and short of like never leaving the apartment and never leaving home and getting everything delivered to you, I'm like, what is doing everything you possibly can look like? Because to me, I feel like my life over the last 2 years has been severely altered, from what it would normally be. I think a lot of people would agree with that, that they're like, I do things every single day that I wouldn't do in not a pandemic. And I am doing things to show other people, just like you said, that I care about mm-hmm. them. And I'm doing things because I'm also still trying to just see if I can make it to the end without ever getting it, and see if I can be one of those kids who missed all the balls in dodgeball. Like, but I think that like, God, 2 years in, we need to get used to destigmatizing people contracting stuff. Like, I think it's kind of like STIs too. Like, they're, and we still have this problem in society where, like, and sex therapists and people talk about this, sex, you know, sex positive podcasts, about like that, the stigmas that we have around things like herpes and stuff like that, where it's this instant idea of like, oh, you're an irresponsible, gross person who is not trustworthy. And it's just sort of like, look, how many millions of people have a sexually active adult life with multiple partners and manage to get through all of that without contracting something? And they take precautions. They use protection. They talk with their partner about, hey, have you been tested recently? They do what they can. But at the end of the day, it's just like, it is an aspect of the reality of the situation. It is like, short of being celibate and being like, I will not take any risk in that arena, there's only so much you can do. And mostly, if you've managed to never have an STI, like, you've just kind of been lucky.
Yeah. you've been lucky.
Yeah. And I think
that, I guess I
sorry yeah
go ahead going. Go ahead no you go
oh
you
I
go.
Was just gonna say that I think that the stigma that we have around it, because it's not just COVID, it's like the stigma that we instantly have around someone who contracts something that is something that's like a contagious thing that you get from someone else, we instantly always tend to assume you must have been doing something really irresponsible and gross. And whether we admit it or not, there's this, and like you said, you're like, I'm not going to judge myself because I know what I was doing. I was at my job, I was at work. And so you're trying to be gentle with yourself. And I think that people experience that with all kinds of things where they're like, I know what I was doing. But we have to do that because we also think other people are going to think what they're going to think. You know, other people are going to think, oh, wow, you were doing a Broadway show and you allowed yourself to get sick. How irresponsible. You weren't even thinking about your coworkers. You weren't thinking about the audiences who paid good money to watch you perform. You were out there doing tequila shots at the karaoke bar, licking the microphone that everyone else had been singing into.
But that's the thing. It's like, what's the line between going to a restaurant and having a drink with a friend at a bar and licking the subway pole, licking fucking, like, right. I don't know. I'm, how do you, what's reckless and what's irresponsible? And at this point, it's all just become so, I can't keep track of what's what anymore.
I had a friend once who got, who became HIV positive the first time that he had sex with, he had just come out of, and he was like met up with a guy for the first time, and it happened, and it was just sort of like, for the rest of his life he's gonna have to live with people thinking like, oh wow, what were you doing? Were you going to like bathhouses and going to sex parties and big orgies? And he's like, no, I had sex with one person, and that can happen, and that's just, you know. And I think
going to bathhouses and having orgies, that's also okay,
that's also like, fine. I
don't know.
Yeah, I think that when you say that, because so many people who haven't had it, like myself, have been to restaurants in the last 2 years and have gone to the movies and have gone to live. God, I just went to the fucking Rose Bowl, Emily. I was at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena with 90,000 people. And like, we're supposed to wear masks, but a lot of the people were from Utah and they weren't wearing masks. And I wore a mask the entire game, but like, I was surrounded by and we're outside, but I was surrounded by 90,000 people. And my cousins who were at that game, who were sitting two rows behind me, almost all of them got COVID. So I'm like, there was definitely a COVID strain spreading through that crowd. And there were probably
just two rows back. Yeah.
There's probably several thousand people from that game who got it. And like,
oh yeah.
And like, you could definitely look at that and be like, oh, reckless, crazy behavior. But I'll tell you what, it's like, I've been a lifelong fan of this team. I like being at their live events is a big thing for my family. It always has been. And like, this is the first time they've ever been in the Rose Bowl. It was a really like historic season for them. And we just went, hey, look, we're all triple vax. We're going to wear our masks and we're going to go to this game. And if barring anyone testing positive before we get there, because you also have to like show your vaccine passport to get into the, to the stadium and all that stuff. But that's people 2 years into a pandemic going, we're taking what precautions we can, and we're going to be surrounded by a bunch of strangers who we don't know who they are. And we're just going to like willingly as adults, consentingly roll the dice here and go, if I get it, hopefully it's mild because I'm vaccinated. And you know, I'm taking this risk in my risk assessment. I'm taking this risk. And I know that there's some people who hear that, who might hear that and go, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, come on. But I'm like, again, it's like, if I can catch it at a restaurant, if I can just go for lunch with a friend and eat a grilled cheese and have a conversation and take my mask off at the table and catch it from the waiter who doesn't know they have it and they pass by and they have a mask, but it gets through and it, you know, like it is the water we're all swimming in. And
well, but I think it's what you just like, that's your risk assessment. I think that's part of the ongoing exhausting challenge of this whole thing is everyday risk assessment. You know, and how navigating that with friends, with loved ones, with family members who might have different risk assessment. And another thing I've noticed so much with my family mostly is like, my mom is so nervous about certain things, mostly having to do with choices my brother and I are making.
Yeah.
And then she'll turn around and go, I'm going to the hair salon today. And I'm like, mom, how, like, we make, and we all do it. I've done it. Everyone I know has done it. You make exceptions because it's not out of any kind of malice or, you know, we're not trying to do anything wrong or bad. It's just like, God damn it.
I
gotta do something.
This is a big thing that I've noticed with, because it's internal fear. People have everyone's got this internal fear of like, hey, if you're in my circle, I'm also monitoring what you're doing because you're in my trust circle of people that I'm expecting to be on the ball with this. But what I've noticed is almost like every time someone in my circle has criticized someone else for their choice, they're not seeing the many different risks that they make on a daily basis. And it feels like each individual person thinks, yeah, but when it's me, I can at least see where I'm going and I know who I'm around and I can at least control for what I'm touching and how often I'm washing my hands during the day. But when it's other people who I see were out doing something else, I don't know who they were around. And I think that people need to chill with that a little bit. I think that a little bit, I'm like, I pretty much uniformly when someone has had some kind of judgment about something that I've done, I'm like, weren't you at Disneyland last week? And they're like, yeah, but like I
would. You always say that. No matter who it is, you're like, weren't you at Disneyland?
And they're like, every time.
I've never been to Disneyland.
They're like, no.
Never been to Disneyland.
I've never been
there. Wasn't.
No, but it's exactly that. It's like people who like, they're like, I can't believe that so-and-so is going to do this. Bye, I'm off to the store. And it's like, right. The store is not this like safe haven where COVID doesn't exist. I know that you need to go there for your groceries. And I know that it is quote unquote essential, but it's not a place where like, it just magically doesn't exist there. Or bye, I'm off to get my hair done or off to get my nails done. Bye, I'm off to get a massage. Like, but I can't believe other people are going to a concert. And I think, I just think even the inability to enjoy something these days without feeling guilty, like to go somewhere and be like, I'm choosing to go here, knowing the world that I'm living in, knowing that everyone else who's there is also taking the same risk, knowing that I can't account for everyone else who's here and what their situation is. I'm hoping that people who like know that they're sick wouldn't come to something like this. I'm hoping that like even super anti-vask, anti-mask mask people would be like, I shouldn't go to that thing knowing that I'm sick and like I'm taking a risk. I'm hoping that everyone there, that we're all trying our best to keep each other safe so that we can enjoy this thing. But the fact that like going out, going to a movie, going to to lunch with a friend, if someone takes a photo of it and posts it online and like you and your friend are not masked at a table and you're smiling, this feeling of like people are going to judge me, they're going to think that I'm a reckless, selfish person. It's hard. It's a lot to, because I think on a certain level, I just want, I think we all want to be able to continue to enjoy our lives and enjoy activities that we do with other people. 2 fucking years into this thing, like at some point it's like, sorry, I could die in a car crash tomorrow and I don't want to just spend the rest of my days. I think I was willing to do a certain amount of like absolute lockdown for a few months. And I think a lot of us have been like, okay, I'm going to sneak back out and just sort of get back into things a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also, it makes me think about like the detriment of social media and how much it facilitates that kind of judgment of each other, of other people. Like if you think about the flu of the, you know, the pandemic of 1918, like I bet there wasn't as much judgment going on because you weren't as aware of everyone else's actions at all fucking times. You know, there was no way to know if your acquaintance that you went to high school with and haven't seen in 15 years went to a bar with her friend. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's just,
I mean, so they did have the same debates. Like they had like the anti-maskers, yes. And they had, but they didn't know, they couldn't keep tabs on what everyone was doing at every
moment. It just makes me go, what are we doing with all of that judgment, all of the gossip? Like, why is that? That's just a distraction. It's just, we're just trying to look at anything that we can have any sort of control over.
I think it's a control thing. I think that where the anxiety comes from is a feeling of, like you said, an intolerance of uncertainty. It's a lack of control. I am not in control of the game anymore, as if I ever was, but I don't have my hand on the steering wheel and I don't know what comes next. It is that's the fear. And it's just like accepting that you never really had control, that maybe gets us to a place of more compassion and understanding. Because I think going back to when you talked about the simple gesture of wearing a mask is such an easy and simple and great way to let people know that you care about them. And I completely agree. And it's the reason why I do it, is just to let people know, like, I in case I have something that I don't know I have, I don't want to give it to you. And I just want you to know that I'm fine with playing by whatever rules I need to play by so that people can feel comfortable and safe in whatever environment. I will always defer to the most anxious person at whatever event I'm going to and try to make sure that they feel comfortable. But I think on the other side of that, people who don't wear masks have a similar thing where they sort of cue to each other. And I think we think it's that they cue to each other, fuck everybody and I don't care about anyone but me. But I think that they signal to each other like, hey, with me, you don't need to be stressed out. It's okay. Like you don't need to be worried that you're going to like, that I'm going to yell at you or I'm going to judge you. I'm a safe person who's not going to judge you if you tell me that you were at a bar last night. Like, I think that they have that same thing where they cue to each other. Like, I'm not a person who's going to make you feel bad for living your life. And I'm only saying this, and I know that this sounds like I'm dipping my toes into sketchy territory, but I'm saying it because I feel like somehow, some way, we need to get back to having compassion for each other all the way around, understanding that we're all dealing with this thing. And like you said, I do think that some of us are better at speaking on those feelings and tapping into it and being honest about like, this has been really hard. It's causing me a lot of anxiety. It's causing me depression. It's been hard on my relationships. It's been hard on, me in all these different ways. And some of us don't really know how to voice that and are sort of living with it bottled up. But regardless, we are all living with it. And I think we need to like find some level of compassion with each other that like none of us chose this. None of us created it. We're all just sort of in it and doing our best. And that's hard because we still want from people social responsibility. We still want from people accountability and a feeling like they're doing what they can to try to mitigate harm or risk to others. But maybe there is something to be said about other people who are on the other side of this, who are like, I want everyone to know that, like, if they want to wear a mask, it's okay, that's fine. And if they don't want to wear a mask, it's okay, that's fine. And I see that they're going through the same difficult thing that I'm going through, and I want to allow them their process of going through it, since none of us are actually in control of this, since none of us are actually able to really control how or when we get we catch this thing. I just want people to know that I accept their process of dealing with this. And
but I've never heard someone phrase it that way. I do think there's room for compassion for that kind of thinking, but I've never heard that,
right?
You know, like making room for each other's process, like that kind of therapy talk coming from the camp of people who, I think ultimately that is what's going on, but yeah. I'd love it. My compassion would extend even further if I could hear them say, listen, I don't know what I'm doing either. I'm scared, but this is how I'm choosing to go forward.
Yeah.
If they could say it, that if I could have a conversation with one person who feels differently about it and that's how they phrased it, I would be very open to that.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know. And no, I'm making huge generalizations, obviously, but
I know. No, trust me. I know. I've been talking to these people in online for the last 2 years, and I know they are incredibly frustrating people. The way that they just kind of come up with numbers out of thin air. They just sort of make stuff up. Like they'll just say stuff that'll be like, where did you hear that? Where did you get that? And they can't like answer me. And I'm just sort of like, what? And the way that they're just so dismissive of the fact, like the way that they'll sort of just be like, 1% chance of death. Thanks. I'll take my chances. I'm not going to be a little scared sheep. And I'm like, you are being so grossly dismissive of millions of deaths and of people who are millions of people who are living with long haul symptoms that might affect the rest of their lives. Like it's so I completely understand the feeling of like, I'm not getting that. I'm not feeling that compassion going both ways, but maybe the mark of like a truly compassionate person is a person who, and I'm saying this as a person who's, I am not saying this from a high horse. I am saying this as a person who tells these people that they're fucking idiots all the time and who gets mad at them and yells at them and calls them dumbasses in the comments all the time. But I'm saying maybe the mark of like, if I want to try to take the high road and if I want to try to get on a high horse, maybe the mark of a truly compassionate person is a person who doesn't need it to go both ways in order to extend it and be like, I get it. I get why you're lashing out. I get why you're being an asshole. You're scared just like I am. And I know that you don't have really language to say it. So I'm going to allow you to have your process and be scared and be an asshole. And I'm going to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm saying this like I'm like maybe that's where I need to get in order to feel better, because I also think part of what's been weighing on my mental health is caring so much about these people and that they're so obstinate and you know
the frustration of caring so much about other people when you can see very very clearly that they don't care about you
exactly
like that is that's like that's banging your head against a wall. So I mean, and I respect the attempt to engage with people like that. And I, you know, I think that ultimately will be the answer, some kind of engagement, but yeah, the frustration of feeling like, oh, like you're not meeting me even close to the middle
right
now. Right. I'm having to come all the way over there. And then that's when you're like, it's kids. That's it's what you said is right. They don't have the language to say what it is they're actually experiencing. Like a child.
Right.
Like these tantrums that people throw are temper tantrums that toddlers throw. And it's just, it's like, what leads people to that in their development, you know?
Yeah, I compare them to children all the time. I say all the time in my videos and stuff where I'm like, you remind me of children. Like and I even try to frame it that way. And they'll say like that I'm being rude but I'm like, I'm actually trying to show you like how silly what you're saying is. I'm trying to show you like how immature and how, because I actually want you to try to see it from an outside perspective. I know as a person something that changes my mind from time to time is when someone frames a position that I have in a way that makes me go, oh, that is kind of a stupid thing that I haven't examined. Like that, yeah. You know, and like helps me be like, oh, I haven't thought enough about that. So I try to do that sometimes, and it sounds harsh sometimes, but it's also like, it's my frustration, and it's also trying in a weird way, in a roundabout way, to be like, be really blunt with it and be like, do you see how stupid this is that you're, what this thing that you're saying, do you see it? And, but I think that being so caught up in their world and in their bullshit and in their process, it's not healthy for people like me who are trying to be in that space. And I think that the best way maybe for me to let go of it is to try to view it as this is their process, whatever it is, however unhealthy I think it is, however unsophisticated I think it is, this is their process through this insane thing that we're all living through. And maybe I can just at this point, we didn't slow the death rate. Like maybe we did, maybe we didn't. I don't know. Millions of people still died and we're all just living in this world. And there's just a big part of me, just like your friend said, and like everyone feels I just want to fucking get back to my life and just sort of,
yeah.
And just sort of deal with like, if I get sick, I get sick and I'll stay home if I get sick and I'll hope that it's not bad. And I'll hope that that I don't give it to too many other people and that I can contact trace whoever I was around in the time that I didn't know I had it. I'll hope that I can take those precautions and I'll hope that my vaccine status will help me and will protect me from hospitalization. But I want to get back to my life, and I also want to get back to not having to be so fucking mad at so many people all the time. It's a lot to carry around, you know? It's a lot to like.
Yeah. But I think part of it is there will always be reasons to be mad at those people, because those obstinate childish people will continue to be that way just about other things, as we, you know, see all the time.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just, I just keep thinking now that it would be such a relief if all of us could just go, we don't know. I don't know. I'm scared. I want to live my life. Like if there could just be some leveling with each other about like shared fear,
yeah,
shared uncertainty, it would just make everybody breathe a sigh of relief, I think. But that's also because I don't have a need to be right all the time. I'm so comfortable, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I'm saying like, I don't get into fights with people because I don't have the need to be right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd rather be able to say, I actually genuinely don't know. And I'd rather not even get into it because I don't know.
Right.
And I guess I just, so part of it is just the lack of understanding of people, small scale and large scale, who really feel a need to be right all the time. I don't relate to that.
Yeah.
And that's my own thing. I'm not saying that I'm the right way to be. I'm not saying that, but like,
no,
that would actually be very ironic if I was.
No, it is a big problem. When I diagnose a lot of like my frustrations, like it usually comes down to like, oh, I just want to be right. I just want to like, I want to win, and that's not good. But also like, you know, people will ask me all the time, like, what makes you so smart? What makes you? And I'm like, I'm just listening to who I think are the most qualified people to get my information from. I'm just trying to like trust people who do know more than me, that they're the right people to listen to. And I'm trying to repackage. I think I'm trying to repackage their message in a way that maybe is more consumable, or like I'm trying to find a way to put it that feels maybe more approachable, or that can break through in a way. And that's my process. That's me trying to do what I can to make me feel like I'm contributing in some way to trying to help, you know, and not being passive. But it's also just it's me trying to have control. It's my process of dealing with the fact that my anxiety's back, and the fact that this has fucking sucked, and the fact that this has been murder on my relationships, and like, you know, yeah.
I'm also going back to one thing just about extending compassion maybe true compassion is being able to extend it without the need to feel it coming back toward you.
Sure.
I think about another thing my therapist says a lot is like, instead of she, you know, she talks often about the frustration with, you know, people's stubbornness and all of that, but that if we can let our hearts break for those people, and not in a way, she was like, she says you have to keep your heart open to everyone and everything, and it will continually break. But that's what compassion actually is. And it's not from a place of moral superiority necessarily, but like, I think that's a more productive way to view it all. And I mean, everything in life, to view our own pain, to view others' pain from a place of just, oh, that hurts. That hurts that they are experiencing, this is how they're experiencing their own pain and their own fear, not from a place of judgment. I'm saying this, that's like a very lofty goal, but I do think it's—
No, totally.
It's something worth thinking about.
I think we're both speaking from places of like, my goal with this conversation is to just express that like, how I'm trying to reframe this in hopes of helping other people. Like, how do we move forward? How do we get out of this? And I don't think, how do we get out of it where like COVID doesn't exist? Cause I don't think I think it's going to exist for the long haul. It's going to be here. Just like the flu is, like, it's like, we're going to be dealing with new strains and new variants, for the foreseeable future. But how do we move forward from the fracture that this has caused in us as a people, and like the scars of feeling disregarded or feeling like so many people don't care, or and feeling, you know, how do we move on from that? And that's what I think we're trying to get at. And just like you said, you have to allow your heart to break for people. I think so much of the goal of like mental fitness, emotional fitness, spiritual fitness, trying to get spiritually healthy is being okay with discomfort. And it's that same thing of like, anxiety is intolerance of uncertainty. And I think it's also intolerance of discomfort, because discomfort is uncertainty. It's like, I don't know what happens next. I'm uncomfortable. I don't know what the right or wrong choice is. That makes me uncomfortable. Being okay with discomfort and being just trying to sit in it and being okay with like, everything doesn't need to feel great. Everything doesn't need to feel awesome. And I'm not doing something wrong if some things feel bad or sad. I can allow myself to have the emotional journey of every day that I have, and have certain things break my heart and have certain things make me feel good, and take that journey on a day-to-day basis. And again, just speaking from a place of like, what I would like to be able to do.
Well, of course.
As
of
a person,
course.
You know, but yeah. And maybe that's it, is just because I think that the conversation of moralizing COVID and all that stuff is like, can we just allow people the dignity of the experience that they're having, that we're all having, and just say like, you're not really doing anything wrong. You're just having a human experience. A really crazy one, like a really wild one that we're all on.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But I think what you're saying could be applied, and hopefully can be applied, way beyond COVID. Like, in everyday life for the rest of time. Wouldn't that be nice?
I think it can. I actually think it should. I mean, there's so many things that I talk to people about all the time where I'm just like, this is like a total off the rails other thing, but it's similar in the same vein, because I'm always just like, can you imagine how fucking awful it would be to be a pedophile? Can you imagine how terrible it would be?
I've had that conversation
just like,
too.
Can you imagine that human experience that you're like, oh, this is the cards that I get? Is I'm this person? And I have to like somehow try to not be this person? Like, that's like, what a shitty human experience. And I think just trying to have it, being able to extend your compassion umbrella to just like even people who do awful things, unforgivable things, people who do things where like we need to agree, like you can't be out on the street with other people. You have to be sequestered away because we can't trust you to make safe decisions for the common well-being. But like, even those people, like, gotta have compassion for you. Like,
well, that's exactly what you were saying earlier about like stigma. Like, if there was a way to destigmatize things like that, then perhaps there could be more help offered to somebody who is a pedophile, and perhaps help early on would mean that they wouldn't actually act on those impulses they have. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. If there was a way for them to not exist in shame. I can't believe we're talking about pedophiles right now.
Yeah, I know.
I thought you wanted me to come on to talk about musical theater. Where did that go? We didn't talk about shows at all. Well, we did for a second.
No. Did you think we were talking about musical theater?
No.
For real?
No, not musical theater. No, I thought we were maybe talking about like how it feels to be doing the show in this time. I mean, that's a conversation that lasts for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, but that's a conversation too, because there are a lot of places that are still not back to live performances. And it's like, should New York be doing live performances? And like, obviously, you do all the same precautions where people have to be vaccinated to come into the theater. They have to wear a mask in the theater. And what we know is, just because a person's vaccinated doesn't mean that they're not carrying something into the theater with them. Just because everyone's wearing a mask doesn't mean that sitting next to a person for 2 hours during a show with a mask on will keep you, you know, mean that you're not going to. Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we did talk about it. That's the conversation. And now it's over.
But
that was it.
But I mean, you're also providing what I consider to be an essential service. Like you're doing something that, like, I just think we fucking need. I need it. I need this stuff. I need to be able to go to the movies. I need to be able to go. I can't watch every movie from home.
It feels so. Last night we've, like I said, we're not selling very well right now. I don't think many shows are. And so this week we've had some comps offered to us. So last night was mostly, I think, filled with friends and people who were really excited to be there and who didn't have to pay to be there, which always helps.
Yeah.
But at the end of our opening number, you know, it always is, it's a great opening number and people are always very emphatic with their applause. But last night there was like another, there was the applause. And then there was like another wave of applause, which happened a lot when we first came back in September. There were a lot of just like ovations that lasted, like the lights would change, but they'd still be clapping. And that happened again last night, and it hasn't happened in a while. And I was like getting really teary because I just feel implicit in that is like,
they're saying
just, like, what we've all been. Yeah. They're saying,
thank you for being here. Like, thank you for allowing us to be here. Yeah.
And we're standing in our final pose and I'm thinking, thank you for being here. And it's just, you can't deny this shared experience. And it's just, it can be very powerful when it happens. And I agree that we need it, but it's just, it feels really precarious right now. I mean, show business feels precarious. It always is. It's like always a fucking toss up. But right now it's just, I think it's going to be okay. But I don't know when.
I know. That's the question. Is it's like, when do we get back? And what does it look like? Are we able? I mean, but I just, that's really the crux of this conversation is like, you are doing something right now where certain people might look at it and go, I don't think you should be doing that. I don't think that you should be, you know? And I'm like, well, for how long are we supposed to not have the communal experience of, and I know that to some people going and watching a football game is like not essential, but I'm like, it is a part of my life and it is a part of the way that I relate to my family. And it's like a very big thing for us. And like, this was an important season for many reasons. And I just was sort of like, I want to be there. I want to be there with everyone. There's something about the communal experience of being together and of being together with people who we disagree with and with people who are from different places and have different beliefs and just being like, but we're all here today doing this thing together and, you know, and pulling in this direction. And
it's what you, it's risk mitigation. We have to make choices. We can assess the risk and go from there. That's what we've been doing for 2 years. But I think we have to just be like gentle with ourselves about that, because I say ultimately too much. That's what life is about. Those shared experiences. We don't exist in silos. Like, you know, this isn't natural.
Yeah.
And even on a small scale, like going to a restaurant, especially in New York City, you know, there's that thing of like, I want to go be around a bunch of people I don't know. I do. I love going to a bar by myself and just being among that energy, but not feeling like I have to be engaging with it.
Yeah.
But just to be around it.
Yeah.
And I really miss that. I really miss that experience. I want that. I mean, I think that's part of, certainly part of life here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in a lot of big cities, and I don't know.
It's a huge part of life in New York City, and yeah. So is the theater industry. It is like the lifeblood of the city. And to just say we're just shutting that down indefinitely it's kind of just not possible. It's just
like, well, we already did that.
Yeah.
We got to figure out, and that's what's happening. I mean, I respect what's happening, which is even these shows that are like Doubtfire, these shows that are shutting down, but they're saying, but we're coming back. Like, listen, I hope that this model works. I hope it does, because we can't do the thing we did before, which is, okay, we'll be back April 3rd. Just kidding. July 15th. Just kidding. November. And you're just going like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this, this back and forth anymore. And I don't think anybody can. I don't think the business itself can. So who the fuck knows?
Right. So yeah, we're still trying different things and still trying to figure it out. I just think that we're at this point where like we're coming up to 2 years, and I'm just sort of thinking like, where are we? Do we want to keep going forward the way we've been going forward, or do we want to sort of look at each other a little bit and go like, is it time to just sort of, and again, keep trying to help each other out, keep trying to wear a mask and do what we can, wash your hands, but like just being gentler with each other and not being so afraid of each other and not being so so critical of other people's process while not being very reflective of our own.
That's what I was going to say. Gentler with each other, but also gentler with ourselves, and just
yeah.
I think it has to start there.
Yep. You got a show tonight?
Heck yeah.
All right.
We do have a show tonight, and tonight is not, we didn't have comps offered to us tonight. So I'm hopeful that maybe it means like there will be an audience.
Yeah. It's Friday night. So come on.
But also, come on, people. But it's also a good exercise in, you know, you walk out onto the stage and you see empty seats and you're like, fuck, where is everybody? And then you're like, hold on. Those people that are here, even if it's not as many as you'd like to see, they really want to be here, mm-hmm. and they are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a good reminder to like see to not automatically look at the absence of something, but to look at the presence, you know, like,
yeah.
They deserve as good a show as we can perform. Do you know what I mean? So,
yep.
I just hope it keeps getting better.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to be out there in April probably, and I hope get to come see you and see you do your thing up there.
Oh, that'd be great.
So, well, it's great talking with you. I'm going to let you go and let you do what you got to do to get ready to go be an actor.
I have to start getting ready about 6 hours before the show. It's all very I put on a full face of makeup first. I work from the outside in.
You do vocal warm-ups for 6 hours before the show.
6 hours. My neighbors love me. It's a lot of lip trills.
You're usually hoarse by the time you get to the theater.
Yeah, I have no voice when I get They're like, what is she doing all day? I'm like, warming up.
Being a professional.
Yeah, ever heard I pronounce it that way? Everyone really hates me there.
You say data and professional.
I'm a professional and I collect my own data. And then I just keep doing my vocal warm up.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me again.
Yeah, thanks for talking to me again so soon.
you're welcome.
Yeah. I'll see you in a couple weeks for another one.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I'm the co-host is what you told me at the beginning. I haven't forgotten that. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Just let me know who we'll be interviewing next. And
great.
Can't wait. I'll collect some data.
You said, I hope people. I cut you off twice. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I hope people don't walk. That's not even worth saying. So you know what I mean? I'm just bringing it back to us before saying that.
Right.
Get Emily back or we'll walk.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little callback.
Little callback. Great. Sweet.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
All All right, so how was that? Awful? Were you freaking out? Or was I saying things that you were going, nuh-uh, Austin? No. Bad. I disagree. Go ahead and let me know. Let me know and reach out, okay? But you can reach out on DM. I like it when lately people have been reaching out and telling me their thoughts on the podcast more, and I like that. I actually, of all the DMs that I get, I would, the ones that I would prefer the most to get are ones about our podcast related messages. When people just reach out, a lot of times people just reach out just to say hi. They just are like, hi, I just want to let you know that I like what you do. And I appreciate that. I, of course, appreciate that. I take the time to read. But the ones that I get into, that I'm actually excited to jump into a conversation with you, is when you reach out with your thoughts on the pod. Mostly, I'm just excited that anybody is listening and that you're listening and that you're getting enough out of it that you want to have a conversation about it. So I feel like there's a conversation to be had about this one, for sure. I kind of want to know where you're at. You know, what's your experience? God, I'm listening to this microphone right now, just in my headphones, my new fancy headphones. And this just isn't, I got to go get a new microphone. And I don't know what I'm going to do with this one that I just bought like a year ago because it was expensive and it's broken. I know I bought a warranty on it, but I bought it in Utah, which means I got to go all the way back to Utah to see if they'll take it back. Whatever. I'll get it. So yeah, hear that? Like I'm not using a recording microphone right now, so you can hear like me breathing and my plosives are really. We'll get it sorted. We'll get it sorted. Thanks for hanging tough with me in this intro and outro. I was using the nice mic for the episode, so it didn't sound as bad in the episode. Whatever. I bet you're in your car right now and you're like, I literally can't hear the difference because on car speakers, you can't tell. But if you're wearing headphones, like really nice headphones, like the ones that I'm wearing right now, and you're I don't know why you'd be wearing like studio quality mixing headphones, but if you are and it's driving you nuts, I apologize. All right, well, that's my friend Emily. If you're in New York, you can go see your show, Come From Away, if that's something you want to brave and go do on Broadway. And you can follow her, Lady Emily Walton, on Instagram. She's really funny and fun and a good time. And that's the show. Okay? All right, stay safe out there. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or by looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. You can support this show by going to patreon.com/austinarcher. We love that. We love our Patreon patrons. God, these plosives are killing me. The show is mixed and mastered, as is all of my music, by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Chris is the best. Go to themarmalademusic.com. Tell him that you want to work with him because you heard his work over here, and you were like, that one episode had really loud plosives because Austin was using the wrong kind of microphone. But outside of that, your work is spectacular, Chris, and I love what you do. And tell him that you want him to do your audio project, and your first one, you'll get 20% off. How about that? How about that? Okay, go do that. TheMarmaladeMusic.com. We love Chris. That's everything, I believe, for this week. All right. I'll see you out there probably on the internet. You're probably going to see me in several videos this week, you know, because you do. And, I don't even think I said this on this episode. I have 1 million followers now. I'm probably saying this to not that many people because I don't think everyone makes it to the very end of the episode. I think once I start saying People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced, I would venture a guess that at least half the people stop listening. So if you're one of the people who's still listening, I mean, I'm sure you know this by now. I got 1 million followers. What? I got 1 million followers. That's fucking crazy. I can't even fathom of how many people that is. And I know that not all of them are watching me on a daily basis or listening to me on a daily basis, but like, it's 1 million people that said, I want to follow this guy and I want to watch this guy's videos. I had to tally up my end of year analytics so that I could update my media kit online. Guess how many views I got this year? Over 100 million. Over 100 million views I got this year on social media. My God. My God, and close to 30 million likes. You know how many times this podcast has been streamed total? This podcast has been streamed total in 2 years and over 100 episodes, 65,000 times. Total. Over 100 episodes and 2 years in. And on social media in 1 year, I got over 100 million views on my videos. Got to figure out a way to get more people to listen to this podcast. Anyway, I just wanted to say something about that. It's been an interesting few days. I've been like, whoa, you know, 1 million people. That's crazy. It didn't instantly, I'm still just doing what I do. I'm souping up the studio and making money moves for 2022, but I don't know. I guess I just wanted to say that. Maybe I'll have London on the show and we'll talk about it, because about a year ago I had him on the show and I was just at 100,000. And maybe I'll have him back on and we'll kind of do a little, like, where are we now kind of thing. All right, well, that's your little treat for hanging out to the end. You know, if you're one of those people that's like, maybe he'll say something different at the end. I did. There you go. All right. Cool. Take it easy. Stay safe out there. Love you. Bye-bye.